Happy summer, Jeff.
Happy summer. Wow.
It got hot quick. Holy crap.
I think it got to 30-something degrees the other day, and I was just baking. Thank God we have air conditioning.
Yeah, and now that we're back to lab 1.0 instead of 2.0, there's no AC where we're at.
No AC, but it's kind of nice in here. Actually, there might be an AC unit lying around, but it's okay.
It's okay.
We'll pay for today.
Oh my God, if I start sweating halfway through... We'll AI edit it.
Because we're so passionate about the subject that we're going to be talking about today, and you guys would be too, because it's definitely something you're very, very interested in.
Before we start though, as you guys read the front title, we are going to talk about how to navigate multiple offers. I really wanted this to be in my back pocket when we first started doing this podcast. Mm-hmm. Over a year ago, actually. I thought that, oh, okay, well, wait until, you know, the market kind of, you know, the interest rate comes down a little bit and we get into that hectic multiple offer. But as you, everybody that listens to our podcast, you know that in the last 5 to 6 months, everybody is still encountering multiple offers in that very specific niche group. Mm-hmm. So we thought that maybe we'll just fast forward it a little bit and then bring back kind of the educational podcast, because we haven't been doing that for a little while, ever since season one ended. And I thought that this is now the perfect time. Because we've been into multiple offers. In fact, I think ever since you've been into the industry, all you really have dealt with is pretty much multiple offers.
I'm pretty sure if we look back at our chat history and every realtor's chat history over the last couple of years, the words multiple offer probably would show up thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of times.
Right. And then it's getting to a point where I'm so accustomed to, hey, so how many offers was there? Mm-hmm. Or how many offers are you expecting? Mm-hmm. And then when I actually hear agents saying
none,
and I'll be like, which is kind of weird, honestly speaking. But of course, if we're having all of this, I can imagine for a lot of, especially first time home buyers, some people that hasn't been in the market for a really long time, they will feel like this whole multiple offer situation might be very, very frustrating. Right? Mm-hmm. So what we're going to do today is we're going to really try to break it down. Ultimately, the key here is to provide you guys, the listener, on what is the best way for you to try to win a multiple offer, yet still keeping you guys safe. If we're just your typical or whatever agent, aggressive agent, we'll be like, just put in a multiple offer situation, podcast done. Subject free, we're done. We're done, right?
Surefire way to win.
Exactly, and then just give me the whatever price that they want, right? You know, go up $100,000 over whatever they're asking, we're done, right? Mm-hmm. That's it. But obviously that's not the purpose of it. What we're trying to do is, how do we win a multiple offer, but yet still keeping you guys, the listener, safe throughout this whole process?
All right, so why don't we get started?
You go first. Why don't we kind of take a step by step? Let's start off with, what is a multiple offer, Jeff?
Yeah, so a multiple offer obviously is when one person is interested to put down an offer on a particular home, but a second buyer comes into play. Mm-hmm. And obviously in most cases, you can only sell the home to one property.
That's right.
This is when there's more competition. Mm-hmm. Is there a limit to how many people can write an offer? No. I think personally the most that I saw was 20. I don't know about you. I think maybe
last year was 27.
Yeah.
Yeah. So no, when we talk about multiple offers, it's not just two. It could go up to 20 something.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes.
And
in BC with multiple offer situations, it's basically a blind bidding. So you don't really know what people are offering, what their terms and conditions are.
Yeah.
Our job is we can only put our best foot forward and hope that it's the best offer out there.
Sounds great, but of course, after a couple of times of failing, this best foot forward just sounds very frustrating, right?
Yeah.
So, but unfortunately, just because where the market is sitting, then obviously, you know, when we get into a multiple offer, the first thing I always tell people is like, look, let's calm down. Obviously, if this is a multiple offer, the seller has the advantage. So now we have to kind of work around that instead of us or the seller having a 50-50 advantage or disadvantage in this particular situation. Then I guess the second question then I'll kind of leave for is, how does multiple offer generally get operated?
Okay. Well, you start off.
I'll start, fine. So generally, one of the first things that we'll let everybody know is that if it gets into a multiple offer situation, the listing agent or the agent that's listing the home has to inform all parties. So what do I mean by that is, like, for example, we're competing, okay? I have a client, you have a client, we both love the same home. I submitted this offer first without any knowledge that you're about to submit that offer. Maybe the listing agent says, oh, I have another agent that they also might. Mm-hmm. So I talked to my client, I submitted it with the knowledge that we're the only offer. And then obviously you submit an offer. The listing agent's responsibility is to tell me that there is now another offer. And then when you submit it in or prior to, because a listing agent would already know that my offer is already in, they need to inform you that, hey, if you submit this offer, we're now into a multiple offer situation. Yeah, so after that, then of course it will be up to the seller and the agent to decide what they want to do next. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing that I want to emphasize, is that how to maneuver through the multiple offer, there is no set rules. It's up to the seller how they want to do it. So some of the common ones, I say option number one, the seller might have the first group to revise, and then the seller chooses after that. You know, mm-hmm. Oh, okay, this is the first guy that didn't know it was a multiple offer. They revised the offer knowing the fact that it's multiple, and the second group already knows it's multiple, so I'll just choose out of that.
That to me sounds generally like the most efficient way of doing it.
Yes.
When there's two parties involved.
When there's two parties involved, right? However, sometimes option number two is the seller will inform the second agent, in this case you, that the other offer, which is me, is revising, and see whether or not you want to revise your offer.
Oh.
And of course, at this point right now, I can let you know that if that seller or that agent really wants, they can continue to play that game back and forth and back and forth. But we will talk about the disadvantages of doing that very, very shortly. Mm. Okay, let's assume that the next step, you revise, I revise. After all the revisions are done, then the seller has three choices. Mm-hmm. Choose an offer and just accept it. Second option, choose an offer, either yours or mine, and then they counter on it. Mm. Now, what is the seller countering at this point? Aren't they just supposed to take it? Is what a lot of my buyers say. No, like, what? It's multiple offers. Like, what are they countering me for?
It's a negotiation. Yeah. So meaning everything is negotiable.
Exactly. So when you mean everything, they could counter on the condition.
Yep.
Which actually is quite common.
Absolutely.
Like, oh, hey, I can't complete on this date. Can you complete on this date instead? Or something like that. Or I think the most common one that gets crossed is like, hey, I don't want to professionally clean this. Mm-hmm. I'll cross that out. That's a counter. It might not be as big as a counter as a price thing, right? Which, of course, the second thing is they counter on price. This is somewhat, I'm not going to say it's rare. I've seen it before. Obviously, both offers didn't reach the expectation that obviously the seller wanted.
Yes.
And then that's why they counter on the price. But I always, when my client decides to do this, I always recommend that to be very careful in regards to the counter, because you don't want to give an idea that you're just playing games and you're not very serious about this sale.
Mm-hmm. I think it also depends on what type of market we're in, though, because in a market where we have no inventory and this is the best property available, the buyer might be open to playing some games. Not what we're advising.
Yeah, not what we're advising. Yeah. Not what we're advising. And once again, we'll explain, if you play games, what are the things that might happen? Mm-hmm. Honestly, I'll just kind of foreshadow a little bit. Some buyer gets frustrated and walk. So that's a risk that a seller is taking as well, right? So the third thing that the seller can do, and I hate it when this happens, I'm pretty sure you hate it too, and this happens way more often than not nowadays, is the seller rejects all offers. And just goes, we're not signing, we're not countering. None of you guys did a good enough of a job.
And then they relist the next day like 100K more, right?
Isn't it frustrating? Like, I'm talking about it and I'm already freaking frustrated.
So why don't we talk about just quickly how this happens or why this happens? Why do you think this happens, that the seller will reject all offers?
Well, when they do something like this, immediately we know that it's a marketing scheme. Mm-hmm. And this is a marketing scheme. I don't want to say it's 100% from the listing agent or from the seller, but it's obviously a strategy that they came up with. The worst one I've seen is they asking for $899 as the listing price. I knew something was fishy because like the BC assessment was sitting at $1 million. Mm-hmm. But then later on when we submitted the offer, they told us that their bare minimum is $1.3 million. I'm like, so you're telling me that you're listing for $400,000 below your expecting price?
Yeah, so I would say that that's already a huge red flag if they're not accepting any offer and they do something like that. I would probably maybe advise my client to look for another property, because if they're willing to play games from the get-go like this, what else could go wrong?
Exactly.
My mind immediately starts spinning like, oh, what if it's a tenant property and the tenant doesn't leave, or X, Y, Z. There's so many ways that this could go wrong.
Exactly. And so overall, when you do something like this, you're really just telling everybody in the market, oh, you're not really serious about selling. You're just testing the market to see whether or not you can get that property. price, which from a buyer perspective, from a buyer agent perspective, I'm letting you guys know right now, is extremely frustrating. You're frustrating and you're wasting a lot of people's time when you want to do something like this, right? Or when you try to pull something like this and then it's not successful.
Yeah.
It's truly a very frustrating.
100%.
Yeah. Now, with that being said, we only talk about two offers, Jeff. You want to tell everybody, like, what happens when there's 26 offers or 45 offers?
Yeah, so I mean, like, when two or more offers, it generally operates the same. There's just a little bit more paperwork to go through, and also the seller has a couple more options as to what they can do. Mm-hmm. For example, with more offers, the seller can choose to respond to only a handful of people. Mm-hmm. Let's say there was 10 offers, and five of them to the seller was trash.
Yeah.
And maybe he gave specific instructions to his agent that says, I don't want to look at anything under 750. And the property was listed for 699.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That, of course, is a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
However, what's the similar is that the first offer who submitted will generally still get another offer, chance to resubmit.
Yes.
Because they're going in not knowing that there's other people in play.
Correct. Correct. Correct.
Then what is another?
No. And then what I would say is, because there is more offers, that ideology that I was talking about is giving people just one chance to revise is generally kind of the golden rule. Let's just take this time to talk about how many times can the seller go back to the buyer. And like we already said, as many times as they want.
Mm-hmm.
But do understand that if you keep playing this game, it's like, hey, you want to bring up your price because that guy's price is, you know, very close, or, you know, you want to bring it up a little bit more, it kind of gives the buyer, like, once again, a feeling that you're just playing games, and it's a really bad vibe for buyers. Like, let's not say real estate. Let's say, I don't know, sneakers, right? Some guy's like, hey, you go on Facebook Marketplace, and you're like, hey, two guys are interested. I'll be like, you offer 200, that guy offer 210. And then I come up to you, he's like, hey, that guy offered 210, what are you gonna offer? And you're like, okay, fine, I'll offer 230.
Oh, sorry, man.
And then you keep back and forth.
So
250. Imagine, like, after, like, how many times? After six, seven times, you're gonna be like, dude, what the hell, man? Like, can you just, are you gonna do this or you're not gonna do this?
I'm either gonna get too frustrated and not buy it, or I'm gonna get so aggressive that I'm just gonna offer an insane amount and maybe have buyer's remorse after.
Right, which a lot of people, I would say, that lean towards the first one when it comes to real estate, because it's a lot of people just, I guess, don't have the money to go super insane, you know, way over price points and stuff like that. It has happened, don't get me wrong, I have seen it, but it's a lot rare in real estate.
Mm-hmm. We talk a lot about, like, sellers playing games, but sometimes buyers play games.
Of course the buyers always play games.
Mm-hmm.
And buyers are liars. That's what we always say since the start of the podcast.
Absolutely. Yeah. So some buyers, when going into a multiple offer situation, sometimes they don't initially put their best foot forward, and they're not going to put their best number right from the get-go.
Right.
But also, that can hurt them in the long run.
Right.
Because we don't know what the seller is going to do.
Exactly. Right. So it's almost like it's a mind game. It's negotiation. It's always a mind game. Right. But what we can say is, and we said this before, is generally, it's not a rule, but generally most realtors, at least with my experience, is they keep the revision as low, like try to keep it as low as possible. Generally, it is probably only two times. I've been in situations where I had to do three times.
Mm-hmm.
There was actually one time I had to do four times, but that was such a unique situation. I'll quickly explain. It's re-revised, and then they said they had, I think that time they had eight offers, and then they only picked the top four, and we revised, and then there's top two, and then however the top two was exactly the same price.
Mm.
And both subjects free. So it's almost the same terms and condition.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happened is that they gave us to revise again because it's two of the same contract and they don't want to lean towards one and say, oh, just come up $100, I'll sell it to you. So they actually got us to revise again and we actually landed on the exact same number.
Again.
And it wasn't a 000900.
Oh, that was
number.
What I was going to ask. It was a whole number.
Yeah, it wasn't a whole number. It was a very unique number, and somehow we landed on the exact
clearly
same number again.
Clearly not unique enough.
Yeah, and then on the fourth time, finally, I lost. And then the other party won. And I know that at that point, the price is very similar. But understand that at that time, the listing agent, he kept apologizing. He was like, I don't want you to feel like I'm playing games, but you guys actually landed on the exact same number. And because you guys, terms and conditions, completion is exactly the same, my seller literally cannot make a decision. Mm-hmm. That's the only time I have seen it done more than, honestly, like three times.
Yeah, I think in my personal experience, definitely three was the max.
Yeah, like honestly, on the third time, generally for me, at least with my buyers, when I have to make that second phone call to talk about revision, they're already super pissed. They're a little frustrated, you can tell.
I think what you and I really just want people to understand is that as agents, we're not trying to make more work for ourselves or for each other or for anybody else. Mm-hmm. Like this is honestly something sometimes that's just completely out of our control.
Yeah.
And we are acting on the instruction of the seller and just adapting to the situation.
Add on to what you just said, I had a example where the buyer was like, he got so frustrated. He was like, Joe, you keep telling me to do this. Like, this is the reason why real estate gets so out of control, blah, 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 about this blind bidding. Like, you're just blinding, adding more numbers on top, more numbers on top. And then I think that one did come back to the third time and he completely lost it. Like, he just like, you guys are the reason. Mm. Like, are you playing games? Like, and he said something that actually hurts me quite a bit. He was like, Joe, you make more commission if I bring this up another $20,000. And I literally had to hold my breath and be like, hey, look, you raising your price by another $20,000, just so you know, I make a fraction of it to a point it doesn't even matter. It we're talking about literally like $100 difference in terms of commission. Like, it's a lot of money, don't get me wrong, but I won't risk losing you as a client just so that I can make additional $100 is what I'm trying to say.
I think sometimes in those situations, it comes from a general lack of understanding, and which is the whole point of this podcast. We're trying to educate the prospective buyers out there that this really is not us.
It's not.
I feel bad. I'm sorry that you had to go through a situation like that. I hope you guys were able to, you know, come together and he understood in the end. But yeah, it's tough.
I agree. Now, I'm gonna go off script a little bit here before we move on to the next subject, which is how do we actually try to win this multiple offer. We lightly touch base on this, but I just wanna get your thought about blind bidding. Mm. If you're, let's say that you have the magic wand, whereabouts in this blind bidding would you change? Or would you actually just completely get rid of blind bidding and make it into an auction like Australia?
Well, I know that in Toronto when they go into a multiple offer situation, they have to register. Mm-hmm. So at least you already know for sure how many parties are going in. Mm-hmm. And I can see why, you know, they don't disclose the price or the conditions because it gives away the bargaining power. What if they cancel out of the contract and then the seller is left in an unfavorable position? Mm-hmm. Okay, that's completely fair. Mm-hmm. I don't know enough about the system over there to say that it works. Mm-hmm. But in my mind, if I were to wave a magic wand, I would try it out maybe for a 6 month term.
Like an auction style.
Like, auction.
Like literally like Australia. Stand outside the house, listing agent, like literally stands on a stage and literally everybody
no
just
No matter says, what decision we make or what, no matter what decision Korea makes, somebody's gonna be pissed off.
Of course. Of course.
And I'm always the kind of person to say, okay, let's try this. If it doesn't work, we pivot and then we change again.
Yeah.
The thing is, with legislation like this, it takes so much time,
money,
resources. It doesn't matter. Like, nobody's going to be happy unless it's a balanced market. And how do we get to a balanced market? Right now, we need more inventory.
We need more inventory. Man, it's such a big issue, right?
Let me throw that question back to you. What is there something that you would want to change?
I don't like the blind bidding system. Honestly, I tell my clients all the time, and I'm sorry to go against the board or the council or whatever. I think if I have a chance and if it's this hot, then we might as well just get into auction. Mm-hmm. That's just how I think it is. Everybody stand in a line, you know exactly who you're going against, right? And then you raise, and then everything would just be in, like, I don't know, less, for example, $5,000 increments.
Yeah.
I do, on the flip side, I'm being my own devil's advocate here. I know for a fact that, because I have friends that live in Australia and New Zealand, they went through this and they say that that doesn't really help with real estate as well, because it gets real personal. Because, like, literally, I can see, like,
of course,
like,
yeah, like, I see you. I know that you're against me, and, you know, I'll see you in the parking lot.
Yeah.
Just kidding. Violence is never the answer.
But, however, I feel like I'm the kind of person that likes to operate in, you know, openness and stuff like that. And I do think, like, an auction style is the most open.
Mm-hmm.
You see the people, you see how many people literally standing there, and then you just go at it
mm-hmm.
until someone wins.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, like, I would love to do that one day as a listing agent. Not saying that I want to become an auctioneer, but I would love to kind of experience that as well. But because right now, for me personally, just with the blind bidding system, it's very difficult for buyer's agent, because one of the things the buyer is going to say is, how much more, Jeff? Like, how much more do I need to add?
Mm-hmm.
And as an agent, like, back then I'll be like, well, yeah, you could try this number. But then what happens is that number doesn't hit.
Mm-hmm.
And then the client will come and be like, you don't know the market. But the reality of the fact that when it gets to a multiple offer situation like this, it's
anything
emotional.
Can happen
yeah.
when it's emotional.
Yeah.
Because we don't act rationally when we're emotional.
Yes.
So we can look at all the comparable data. We can look at the most recent solds. We can advise that, hey, it'll be within this range, yeah. 30 to 40K.
Yeah.
But there could be someone coming out here and just said, nope, I want this so bad, I'm gonna pay 100K over, which did happen hundreds of times over yeah. the last couple of years.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, there was that one Tofino, you remember when the market mm-hmm. was going crazy, that it sold $1 million over asking?
Yep, I think it made the news.
It made the news, right? So that's kind of what we think, just to wrap up with multiple offers. Now let's get to the juicy part of it is, mm-hmm. okay, now we're in a multiple offer. What do I have to do to win? Now, of course, this is where I want to really break down the contract. Because why do I want to do this is because it's very straightforward. When it gets to a multiple offer situation, obviously the seller has the advantage.
Mm-hmm.
So as a buyer, it's up to you, is how far do you want to bend backwards for the seller to get this home? Okay, so when I generally talk about the contract, let's just break this down. Well, there's three things I like to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about, just get the elephant out of the room. Price.
Oh, okay.
Terms and condition, and timing. And what I mean by timing is when you want to complete, when you want to get your keys and stuff like mm-hmm. that. It is also kind of part of terms and condition, I guess, but I want to have a separate conversation about that. The reason why I want to bring up these three is because when it gets to a multiple offer situation, we need to somehow break these three down. Either you win in one aspect so much that the other offers are just like, I can't compete with that. I'm talking about, like, you know, price.
So much money. Yeah.
That you could probably put other terms and conditions, maybe with the subject, and
of
the
course.
Seller is willing to risk it.
Of course. I'll give you an example. There was a client who was selling a home
mm-hmm.
and they had ideal dates in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say the dates were March 15th.
Right.
This the buyer came in, offered a lot of money
yeah.
and wanted the property February 15th.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were willing to move.
Yeah.
Because they can take that money, they can rent a place for a month
mm-hmm.
and they're still winning.
Yeah. No, and that's exactly the point. And sometimes when it comes to multiple offers, unfortunately, that is everything that the seller cares about.
Money talks.
Okay. However, let's put the price aside, because I don't know if you have done, you experienced this, but I have actually done represented buyers where I won the offer mm-hmm. without having the highest price. And I actually been on the flip side, is where my seller actually chose an offer that wasn't the highest price.
Yes to both. Multiple occasions.
And that's probably because the terms and condition is better.
Of course.
Now, this is where I want to park our conversations for a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about this, because when I talk about this kind of situation in my mind, I can already imagine our listening going, oh my God, Joe and Jeff, I already know where this is going. You want me to put subject free, don't you? Without even doing anything on the home. Risk. You want me to take a risk with a high price. That's exactly what you want me to do.
Yeah, if we were ABC agent, but we're not.
Yeah, exactly.
So make sure you guys pay attention to this part.
Exactly. So I want people to understand is that when we get to a multiple offer situation, or we're about to enter a multiple offer situation, maybe because we know that they're taking offers altogether, say on a Tuesday,
mm-hmm.
there are things that you could do beforehand in order for you to keep your contract competitive,
mm-hmm.
but yet keeping you safe. Okay, let's just start off with I don't know, let's talk about condos. I think that's probably the easy to stratify homes, condos, townhouses. We always talk about the big six, the big six subjects.
Yep. Financing, inspection, reviewing the title, property disclosure statement, home insurance, and strata docs.
Break it down. If I want to be safe, but I want to be competitive, how can you, what work can I be done to not have these subjects in place, but yet you persuade me to feel like it's safe for me to do so?
I think number one would be, as soon as the buyer expresses interest in this property, is to try and get the strata documents right away, summarize them so you know what you're getting into. That's number one. The biggest concern with buying a stratified home is that you don't know what the condition of the building is. You don't know what the parquet is like, what big repairs are coming in. At the end of the day, that is all money. We've all heard of situations where people bought a home, didn't know that there was a $4 million special levy, and they're gonna have to pay 20 grand out of pocket. Nobody wants to hear news like that.
Exactly. And unfortunately, with multiple offer situations with a lot of people, because everything is so tight, it's so time sensitive that they actually just completely didn't even read it. And then they're actually submitting an offer with like no idea about what's happening with the building. Okay, so strata documents, one out of the big six, you say that read through the strata document prior to you putting down the offer.
Yep.
I add on to what you just said, that's a great idea. And by reading through the strata document, you can also feel more comfortable. Should you really like this home, for you to go a little bit more aggressive, because you know that the building is either safe, or you might want to do maybe a lower number because the building might have some upcoming repairs coming up.
Exactly. And right? You demonstrating that knowledge is really part of your bargaining power, because of course the seller should know that these things are coming, and it's going to work against them if they don't disclose it.
Okay, great, Jeff. Thank you so much for that. I don't need the reviewing strata document subject anymore. What are you going to tell me in regards to the title?
With the title, it's the same thing. You know, a service that you and I offer is that we actually have a legal department that will review the title, translate it to make sure that our clients as a buyer are protected. In addition, when they purchase insurance, they'll have title insurance anyways, so they are protected either way. It's just an extra layer.
Yeah. And PDS is the same thing, because some people write subject to property disclosure statement.
Correct. So that's already three subjects gone.
That's three subjects gone. Let's go with number four, insurance.
Home insurance.
Home insurance.
Okay, well, if you have the strata documents, you're gonna have your insurance document. You can already submit it to whoever your broker is for insurance, and you'll know whether or not it's gonna be approved.
Yes.
9 times out of 10, unless the water deductible is over 250K.
Yeah.
You're gonna be fine.
To add on to what
if you were over 250K, we wouldn't tell you to buy that property anyway.
Yeah.
Or if really, least me and you.
Yes. And if you really, really want it, we do have other options. There is some insurance companies, I think I taught you before, is that they do insure stuff that's over 250K. Obviously, it gets expensive, right? Mm-hmm. Add on to what you just said, most condos, townhouses, I'm not too worried. And most buyers, they're not like, dude, if my neighbor upstairs and downstairs can get insurance, I'm pretty sure I can get insurance for roughly the same amount, because everybody goes through the same strata documents, same process. However, when it comes to a detached house, you have to do this. Like recently, we have one of our clients bought in Coquitlam, and they went to, obviously did all of this stuff, and the insurance came back, I think was $1,000 more expensive than their super mansion that they had in Maple Ridge.
Yeah.
And then they were like, what the heck? Why is my insurance so expensive? And then we went through and realized that they're expensive because your property sits on a ravine. Your backyard is literally a river, right? And then obviously Coquitlam as a area, just for some odd reason, the insurance company sees that it's just a little bit higher risk. And then after that explanation, they're okay with it. But if they didn't even try to explore this prior to removing the subject, they would have been shocked.
No, they would have been shocked, and they would have been pissed.
And it would have been very,
and
very
I mean,
pissed.
We don't even talk about oil tanks, you know? What if there's an oil tank on the property, and the property might not even get insured?
Yeah.
So this is all homework leading up to it that's like very, very important.
Exactly. Okay, so we have four. There's two big ones. What do you do with financing?
Financing, I mean, you're really going to have to do the math and have a very serious chat with your mortgage specialist if there's any way for them to preview this property and talk to their team and see if it's a possibility. That.
And just to add on, this is the reason why when we do market update, when we're advising the buyers at the end of the podcast, what do we always say?
Get your finances in order and get your pre-approval.
Yes. So the reason why I say that is because a lot of people, obviously, the biggest risk comes from, you know, your own approval. If you get pre-approved, then you understand that if anything happens, it's not your problem, it's maybe the appraisal problem. Mm-hmm. But appraisal generally, if your asking price is not too far
most
from...
Most of the time they pass.
Most of the time they will pass unless it's something outrageous. Mm. Right? So this is where why we always say when the market is good, get pre-approved, get pre-approved, get pre-approved. Mm-hmm. I don't have a statistics, but I was talking to a more senior agent. They're saying that financing is probably 50% of the reasons why a contract falls in place, falls off, mm-hmm. right? Like breaks apart. A seller understands that. And I can bank any seller right now, if they see a subject to financing, they get a little bit more worried. Mm-hmm. Then in comparison to something that's not
I would say most of the time it's like a yellow flag, not quite a red flag, but yeah. You know, there is some inherent risk there that someone can easily use the, oh, I didn't get the financing, mm-hmm. sorry, I got to cancel out of this contract.
Exactly. And honestly, when it comes down to a multiple offer situation, you have subject to financing, it just looks a lot weaker. Mm-hmm. Right. But however, of course, if you want to remove financing, this is the one that we as agents, we can't really control. Mm-hmm. Please, if this is the situation, talk to your mortgage provider and just to make sure that, hey, I'm doing this. This is the property. Take a look at it. This is the price. Just to make sure that based on your overall glance, nothing crazy is going to happen. Mm-hmm. At least try to have that conversation.
And I mean, in the last 10 minutes, we went from six subjects to now one.
One. Let's talk about this last one, because this last one is where a lot of people go, no, Joe, I have to put this in because they don't want to take the financial investment into mm-hmm. it ahead of time. Mm-hmm. Inspection. I want to do a subject free. This is the only way, but you're telling me to put subject free and I don't know anything about the home. What the hell? This is so risky. What are you going to say?
You got to do a pre-offer inspection.
There we go. It's funny because you make it sound like it's very natural, mm-hmm. but there are some agents out there, they do not advise their client to do so whatsoever. They rather just talk and persuade their clients to go subject free.
And that's, I want to kind of draw attention to what you just said, persuade. Our job, yours and my job, is not to persuade. Yeah. It's to advise.
Yes.
Which means we give them all the information yeah. and let the client decide.
Yes.
And I would feel personally that if I didn't disclose that to them, I'd be doing them like a disfavor.
Right. Absolutely. Right. So
it's up to them to decide whether or not they want to spend the money. Exactly. How bad do you want the home?
Exactly.
You see those other wolves out there. There's 20, 30 people lining up to see this home. If you really, really want it, you better have an inspector ready.
Exactly. And this is where a lot of buyers, they don't get it. And also they're not getting the regular advice. As a buyer, as a listener, just note that, let's say that they're taking offers on Tuesday and you absolutely love this home, but you don't know what number to put in because you don't know if the piping is okay. You don't know if the roof is okay. You don't know if the appliance is working. Generally, the listing agent will open up a day or open up a period. Should you want to do pre-inspection, they'll most likely cater to it because that means that you're freaking serious about this offer mm-hmm. and most likely you're going to come in strong. Mm-hmm. Why would the listing agent say, no, you can't do that? Unless there's a specific reason. I had one because COVID and the seller actually caught COVID, so nobody can go in.
Yeah. Yes. In an ideal world, that's how it would play out. But I only tell you, I literally saw a listing in Brentwood this past weekend. Mm-hmm. Open house Saturday, Sunday, first showings. Mm-hmm. Offers Monday.
I guess pre-inspection is Sunday night, and that's up to the listing agent. or Monday first thing in the morning.
Yeah.
I've done that before. I got an inspector to go in to literally inspect a home at 8 o'clock in the morning on a Monday because they're taking offers 3 p.m. Okay. So, Jeff, what is the reason why some buyers don't want to do this?
They don't want to spend money.
There we go.
That's it. How much does an inspection cost for a condo? Anywhere from $400 or more. For houses, it could be much more than that.
Maybe $1,000 and stuff like that, right? And what happens if they don't win the offer?
It's also an emotional process. You don't want to feel like I'm losing something already before there's any chance that or any guarantee that I'm going to win. Right. And we get it. But when you're buying a condo that's $1 million, is $500 that much to secure or to buy your peace of mind?
Right.
It might be different for everybody.
That's right.
For me, I much rather spend that $500 now, mm-hmm. as long as it's a property I really love. And if I don't love it, then no, I'll move on.
Yeah.
That's how I know. If I'm willing to spend the money, that's how I know I really, really want it.
And that's the reason why I said a lot of buyers, they're shy. They don't want to ask. They feel like, oh my God, like would the listing agent feel like I'm very annoying and I'm being very detail oriented? It's actually the reverse. Listing agent loves to hear a buying agent calling them and be like, hey, my buyer wants to do a pre-inspection. Mm-hmm. trust me. And then as a listing agent, at least for me, and I'm pretty sure for you, you will try every darnest thing to make that happen.
Of course. And it gives me more security even when we are negotiating offers that like, okay, this person put the time to put in a pre-offer inspection. They spent $500. Even though they're not the highest price, maybe I will advise a client that like, hey, I feel like this is more of a safe offer for us to go for, and that's less likely it's going to get canceled.
There we go. Right. So this is something that first-time home buyers, listeners, when you get into this situation and you are kind of like, yo, I don't want to be doing this, I don't want to be taking on this so much risk, we literally just spent 15 minutes eliminating every single subject for you on how you can go in subject free and yet keeping your guys safe. This is it.
You're welcome. That's the end of the podcast. Let's go get a bubble tea.
No. Of course, now that we talked about terms and condition, the last thing we want to talk about, because there's three things on the contract, the last one is timing. Just quickly touch base on it. In a multiple offer situation, as a reminder, you are on the backside. Like, you know, you are trying to cater to the seller because you're hoping the seller would choose you over someone else. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like dating. It's kind of like Tinder, right?
I don't know what you're talking about.
No, it's fine. It's fine. We can't, because in terms of timing, it's so unique. Everybody's situation is different. But at this point right now, we can say based on what's happening inside the unit, we can kind of give you some general guideline on what the seller is most likely thinking in terms of timeline. Mm-hmm. I'll go over the first one. If the home is vacant, how quickly do you think the seller wants to get rid of the home?
ASAP, brother.
Why?
They don't want to keep paying a mortgage or a strata fee. They want the money and they want to go and they want to move on to the next stage in their life.
There we go. So if you're trying to bid onto a home that is vacant at this moment right now, you go in, it's beautifully staged, new fresh paint. In the back of your mind, you're probably already thinking, okay, they probably want this home.
Quick close, baby.
Quick close. What is quick close, Jeff? How quick is quick nowadays?
3 weeks.
3 weeks is the quickest. Yeah. When we say quick close, really honestly, it's about 3 weeks to about a month.
Can it be quicker? Yes.
Just
as long as you pay.
Rush fees. Second situation, you walk in, it's a beautiful home, but they tell you that it's tenanted. Automatically, Jeff, when do you think the completion date is going to be?
Minimum 2 months.
2 months rounded to the next closest month.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What if it's a fixed term? Then obviously when the fixed term ends.
Exactly. And then that, obviously, the listing agent will tell you at that point. It's very, very straightforward. I think before we started the podcast, there are situations where they might be able to close a little bit earlier. However, that is a conversation that the seller and the tenant must have, and they must come into an agreement.
Yeah, I mean, as a landlord, I could of course tell a tenant, hey, I really wanna sell this place, I'll give you the next 1 month for free, can you move out sooner?
Yeah, so whatever the deal is between them, but generally if it's tenanted and the seller doesn't wanna break any rules, they don't even wanna have this conversation, then once again, as a reminder, 2 months rounded to the next closest month. Now, last one, and this is the one that gets a little tricky, and this is the one that we really don't have a template for. It does require your agent to call the listing agent to get a little bit more information. Multiple offer, walk-in, owner occupied. Mm-hmm. You don't know what's going on with the owner.
Yeah. Are they downsizing? Are they moving out of the country? Have they found a place yet?
Those are all the questions. Have they bought? Is there a specific date if they bought? If they haven't bought, do they need to look? Are they looking to rent after this? Are they looking to buy after this? Where are they buying? How is their accommodation? Or do they have a vacation home that they can stay with?
It sounds like there's a lot of homework that the buying agent should be doing in order to make sure that they are fulfilling that subject.
Exactly. Like for example, you go in, your offer is beautiful, it's subject free, it's one of the highest prices, but then for some reason you didn't ask this question and you asked to complete in 1 month, but then the seller is like, what the heck, man, I still need to buy a home. Mm-hmm. And then you lose an offer like that. That would be a bad
I mean, you
case.
And I both know 99% of people out there think that agents don't know what they want because they don't listen, first and foremost.
Yes.
Number two, they're not asking the right questions. You ask better questions, you get better answers.
There we go, right? So that's pretty much it. I mean, this is really the core of what we really want to express to you guys in regards to this podcast, is there is a way to keep you safe while maneuvering through these multiple offers. Not every single agent is willing to do this, because trust me, it's a lot of work if you bid and you bid and you bid and you bid and you bid.
It takes hours and sometimes over the span of a day or two.
Exactly, exactly. So, however, our job, like what Jeff has always said throughout this all this time, especially in this podcast, is our job is not to persuade you to go subject free. Our job is to provide you other alternative to make you feel comfortable to go subject free by doing the homework ahead of time. Right now, with that being said, before we wrap up this particular podcast, there is a new rule that recently came out in regards to multiple offer. You want to share with our listener?
Yeah, and I think the general public was pretty happy with this bit of news. So the BCFSA now has introduce a new mandatory form.
Woo! 10,000 forms. Let's roll. Let's go, baby.
More paperwork for us. That's great. In terms of multiple offer situations. So at the time, when there is a multiple offer situation, the listing agent is now required to document how many offers they were, what brokers they came from, and it needs to be submitted to all parties who are part of that multiple offer situation within 24 hours of the offer getting accepted.
Terms and conditions?
They cannot list the price or the conditions.
I should be asking my management broker, but you read through this. It's just the brokerage, right? They don't put the brokerage and the agent's name. They just put the brokerage down.
From what I know is that they need to know the brokerage.
Just the brokerage.
Not the exact agent.
Perfect, perfect. Because
I could be wrong, and if I'm wrong, please let me know, and we'll revise.
I guess before I start saying what I need to say, what do you think? What are your thoughts about in regards to this?
Like so many of these new initiatives, not bad, not great. It could be better, in my opinion.
Okay.
And what I mean is that, hey, it's great to know after the fact, but wouldn't it be better to know during?
That is my problem right there.
Because what kind of offer I'm going in with, if there's one other competitor, two competitors, and three plus, is going to be very different.
Right. Sorry, I'll just add on to what you're saying is, I see the point of this, but what really bugged me is it's mandatory to be sent to all the buyer's agent 24 hours after the offer has been accepted. I'm sorry, once the offer has accepted, this is past tense.
Yeah,
I don't care.
I'm already moved on to the next property, or I'm waiting for these subjects to fall through, or I'm waiting for the rescission period to be over.
Right, so yes, I get it. It helps close the loophole of, I don't know, apparently there's some agents that will actually lie about multiple offers, like how many offers they have. I don't know why they would do it, but some people do. Okay, you close that loop, but you're not really serving that purpose of literally informing the buyers how many offers there is on the spot. Mm-hmm. I agree with you. If you're tell me that it has to be exposed on the spot, the way the buyers will operate will be a little bit different if there's one offer, there's four offers, there's 10 offers, or there's zero offers.
Yeah, the psychology completely changes. If they do know that there's 10 plus offers, maybe they're not even gonna submit.
There we go. And that's the only thing that really bugged me about this multiple offer form is that if you're gonna go with it, why not make it live? Like a registration system, like what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like that is the most useful time. Having this 24 hours after the fact, no, once again, it's past tense, man. You're not really helping anybody at this point right now. Just my thought. Ultimately, I think maybe the Toronto's registering system, is something that I would like to see here in Vancouver instead of this form.
And I mean, if you guys are from Toronto and you're listening, please put in through the comments like what you guys think about it. Do you like it? Do you hate it? Is there something you would change about it?
Yeah.
We'd like to know.
Yeah. Like, are you guys are a big fan of the blind bidding system? Or do you guys want to see the auction system? If you guys like the blind system over the auction, we would love to know why. Because honestly, I keep thinking about it. I can't persuade myself to say that, oh, yeah, no, you know what? No, blind bidding is better than auction. In my mind, I was just like, if people like it that much, we just let it go auction. That's just what I think at the back of my mind. So please, I'm open to suggestions. I'm open to different opinions. Please persuade me on why blind system is better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. We went through a very big topic today.
Yeah. So hopefully for whoever's listening, thank you so much for sticking with us all the way to the end. I know that this one, back to educational, might be a little bit more dry, but we're hoping that there is at least a little bit of snippet that you got out of today that you can take and maybe discuss with your agent and, you know, discuss with your family members on how you could proceed and hopefully win your next multiple offer. And with that being said, you want to do a quick outro for everybody?
Oh yeah. My name is Jeff.
My name is Joe.
We're the Micro Vancouver Real Estate. Please tune in next week for a brand new episode.
And we'll go from there. Thank you guys. See ya.